Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, fellow entrepreneurs in Orlando, Florida. Welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show. My name is Josh, and I'm your host, and I go around talking with Orlando entrepreneurs and those who support the community. I'm excited to talk to you guys about Julian. He's the CEO of Nightspeed Moving. He started it when he was just 20 years old, and now they're on track to hit $1 million in revenues this year. Julian, welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneurs Show.
Thank you, Josh. Thrilled to be here. You seem like an awesome guy with the right mission, so I'm happy to get behind it.
Yeah, awesome, man. So why don't you talk to us about, you know, about your moving company and how you got started in that?
Sure. So I was a student at UCF at the time. I was majoring in finance, and I was interning at Lockheed Martin. I was doing the CWEP program. So for UCF students, I'm sure you're familiar. And I was there, and I got a taste of, for the first time, of the corporate environment. A little background on me: I've been a lifelong hustler / entrepreneur since I was a little kid. So I did everything from garden cleaning. I cleaned cars. I used to sell pens in school. I would buy stuff online, sell it to my classmates. So I've really just been doing this for fun, and that's what Nightspeed started as. So I was at Lockheed at the time, and I felt the cap on my contributions. So I knew that no matter how hard I worked and how much I proved myself, there was really only so much that I could do, which just led me astray. So it got me not too interested in what I was doing, and it started off very simply. So I really, to start a business, I thought, and this is what I always do, is what demand can I fill? What problem can I solve? Right. So at UCF, it was my second year as a sophomore, and I had already moved three times myself, and I was always looking for somebody else to help me do it, and there was no student service. There was no like go-to service for college students to go to. So my first idea was I can start a student moving service by students for students, branded around the UCF name. So I went around. I remember at Lockheed, I printed these flyers about, we're students. We can help you with door-to-door moving, whatever. Meanwhile, I really don't know anything about moving during this time, right? I just knew that I knew how to deliver on customer service and make somebody happy. So I went around to apartment complexes in the UCF area and started pasting these things around. And about a month later, after getting turned down with a bunch of calls because I wasn't professional, I didn't know what I was doing, didn't know really anything about a moving company at all. Got our first job. I remember we messed it up. We did like an 8 or 9 hour job, something that today our team would do in 3 hours. So imagine that, keeping a customer happy throughout that whole experience. It really said something about our service, the type of quality of service that we delivered. Fast forward, you know, I started doing this thing on the weekends. I started getting more and more excited. I started telling people about it. You know, some people told me, yeah, that's nice. You know, just make sure you get your degree, make sure you get good grades. And it started very humbly like that. 2 years down the line, we competed in the Joust, which is a Shark Tank style pitch at UCF. And we made it to the semifinals. I remember getting knocked out in the semis after working really hard on that business plan. And that's the moment where we decided to take it for real. So we said, we have this plan. You know, we've proven out a demand. We know that there's a demand for a moving company with that delivers good customer service. So we started off as a student moving service. Little by little, we started getting calls from parents. Can you guys do homes? Can you guys do our apartments? After saying no a bunch of times, we decided, yes, we're going to take on the business. 2013, 2014, when we officially launched, we were still very part-time with it, right? So it was an existing business. It was a real service. We had a group of maybe, you know, three or four of my buddies that were helping me do the moves. And in 2016, we decided to do our first round of fundraising. So we took it to friends and family. We pitched. We said, look what we've accomplished with limited resources, because we started out with no money. Here's what we think we can accomplish going forward. They believed in us. And from then to now, really to fast forward, and we can go into specifics, we're now a statewide residential and commercial moving service. So we do homes, apartments, we do big offices, we do any type of mass labor, operating in Orlando, South Florida, and Tampa. And we like to think that we're bringing a new face, a new brand, a new expectation for what a moving company should be in an industry that's been kind of dying out. And that's where we are today, you know, just trying to continue to grow in Florida and continue to deliver on the promise of that good service that we preach so much.
Wow. Okay. So that's great. So you were a student, you've moved multiple times, and you said, man, this sucks, right? So there's maybe an opportunity here to do it for other people. Because you couldn't find good help. You couldn't find friends that would do it for anything more than pizza and beer. So you started this idea that I'm going to do it as a service just for students. And then over time, you went for a pitch competition, got knocked out of the finals, and you started doing this as a legitimate business for people, and you started getting all these requests in. Now, why did you go for funding? So you were doing this as a job, and then you went for like a friends and family round. Why did you go and approach them for funding?
So I think that I took the approach, and I'm so glad that I did, of building a real business with real revenue first, and then funding on need, not just because I believe that it's a prerequisite to be an entrepreneur that I have to get funded for $1 million, right? So like that's where you see a lot of going on. I think fundraising should be used for, the reason that we needed it is because we were getting to the point where we didn't have our own trucks, we didn't really have our own like materials, assets to use. We were getting to the point where our demand was so high and we weren't delivering on the promise of who we were. So we said, hey, we need our own truck. We need to develop some serious training. We need to upgrade our dollies. We were using these, you know, Walmart dollies. We need some real equipment. So it was really just demand-based. It was when the company required it. We were getting the demand. We were making promises on who we were. So we had to really step it up. So that round of fundraising was really to deliver on the promises we were making.
Awesome. So talk to the people out there who are listening into this. What was it like going to friends and family? Because they call it a friends and family round, right?
Right.
What is it like approaching friends and family asking for money? What went through your head? What went through their head?
Well, the interesting part is it's very hard to get yourself to do it mentally, just because you still feel like you're the friend in the situation, or you're the son, or you're the nephew in the situation. What went through my head is, if I can make a compelling enough plan and be convincing enough that I can execute on it, that's what investors are looking for. Somebody that they believe. So it's not so much the idea. It's not so much, you know, is this a good idea, or is this a good plan even? It's, can you develop a plan, and do I believe that you can execute the plan? So for me, it was, I have to make a compelling enough argument to get these people that have known me all my life as the jokester and as all the other sides of me that I have to take me seriously as a businessman. I had to have a very compelling plan. And as a resource, one of the first things I filled out was the business model canvas. I'm sure you're familiar. It's just a really good way to map out your entire idea and see if it's, you know, viable financially and with the resources you have. So putting together a good plan really was what was on my mind, is I need to be, you know, tell a convincing story through this plan.
All right. So you had this business model canvas, you had your pitch decks that you built when you were doing the joust, and you had like this compelling story of the traction that you got so far. And then you reached out to the family members, friends and family. What did you ask them? Hey, I got to talk with you. Let's sit down. Did they think you were selling like multi-level marketing or
anything? Do I have to sign 3 people up for this? The way I approached it, from what I remember, because this is a couple years ago, I said, look, the business is ready to go to the next level. I think I really want to make this my full-time career. Because keep in mind, this was still at a time when, I forgot to mention, in 2015, I ended up still running it part-time, but ended up taking what most would call a real job. I graduated and I got put in an operative position in another business. But I said, this business has merit. It could be, you know, the industry has demand for this. We could be a player in the space. If we get the funding now, we're the people that can do it. You know, it was really just that.
All right. So how did the first meeting go? The first time you pitched this to a friend and family, what was the meeting like? And did you land funding on your first pitch?
No, and terrible. So one of the things that I've gotten better at is sales projections, because it really comes down to, I guess, the pitch, whether somebody's going to invest. You have to tell an investor 2 things. What do you expect to do financially, and how will I ever get my money back? I didn't have a very good answer of how will you get your money back, right? So that was the first resistance. It was like, yeah, great. You're going to, you know, spend a lot of all of my money on what you think are good ideas, but how am I going to see this money back? So that got me thinking of, okay, now I really have to be forward looking and come up with a strategy. How could we, how are we going to get our money back out of this? You know, are we going to start pulling profits when we get, when we reach that point? Are we going to go, you know, build this business to, for an exit to, you know, to be bought out by another company? Do we want to franchise this? Is this something that could be franchised? So it got me thinking. The first couple pitches, you know, I wasn't thinking that. I was just projecting that we were going to sell six figures and we're going to do this, we're going to hit that benchmark. And I was very optimistic and naive. So the first couple ones were tough. And then you just learn, you know, you ask for feedback. You ask, why didn't you invest? What was it that you know, stood out? What were the red flags here? And just based on all the feedback that I got from a lot of people, I was always able to improve the pitch deck every time after that.
How many times do you think you pitched, and what was the size of the first check?
All in all, that first round, we ended up getting in the neighborhood of six figures. The first check, I remember, was for $15,000. It was $30,000 investment spread into two parts. And what was the first question? I'm sorry?
I forgot.
Me too, man. You're just taking me all the way back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember, I mean, getting that first check was great. It felt really great because it felt like somebody not only says they believe me, but they're willing to put their checkbook on the line and really get behind this mission. And it adds a different level of responsibility, you know, when you have somebody else's money.
Yeah, that oh crap moment when you had that first check in hand, right?
Yep.
Cool. All right. So from selling pens in your classroom to buying big trucks and non-Walmart dollies to move on other people's dollars, what did you exchange in for that fundraise? So you did a fundraise, friends and family round. What did you exchange to them? What did you offer them in terms of equity or stock or convertible notes or debt? How did you structure that?
So I went, I mean, for me, it was one of two options. Either I'm going to take a loan and I'm going to be liable for this money regardless of what happens, or I'm going to get these people to really get behind it and take straight equity. What I did from the very beginning with our first investors is just straight equity. So we said, you know, you're going to give me this amount of money, I'm going to give you this percentage, and then we'll agree on, you know, moving forward if we're both going to dilute, if I'm going to dilute, whatever that is. But the way I went with, because of a lack of experience, and B, just because I thought I was hedging my risk the best, is just to go for straight equity, you know? So if we ended up losing, you know, we both took the risk, we both swung for the fences, and we're not liable for the loan amount. So I highly recommend going for that approach. If you're early on just starting to build something up.
Okay, so why don't you unpack that a little bit, because you just dropped a golden nugget of wisdom based on experience. And looking back, you would say, this is what I would recommend to another entrepreneur. So give that piece of advice to an entrepreneur out there and explain the difference or explain why.
Okay. Well, I think when you look for fundraising, like I said, it's either because the demand is so high and you can't handle it, that you need the financial resources, or another really important thing to look at is, do you want this person as a strategic partner? So something I always say and have done from the beginning is assess yourself, what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, and you know, pair that up with the business plan that you have. And instead of trying to, you know, overpromise saying you could deliver on across all fronts, bringing in equity partners is really smart from the beginning, because if they add value past their dollar amount, you're adding on a partner that's going to help you go further. Because they add skills to the table that you don't have. So as an example, if you're not a real administrative guy, if you're not a finance guy, if you're not an operative guy, but you're brilliant with ideas, you know the next thing that's right around the corner, but you just don't know quite how to build it and enforce it and make it into a process, find somebody that has that strength. Engineers are great for that. Finance people, accountants are great for that. So I would say, you know, just fill in the gaps when you look for investors, not so much just for cash, but what other value outside of their cash do they add?
Awesome. Yeah, that's really good input. So I guess what would you say are your like greatest strengths that you have as a CEO? What is your greatest superpower?
Good question. I actually have a hard time answering that myself because I can't put a finger on it. But I think I'm a good communicator. I think I have a capacity to build out a whole plan and instill that vision into a lot of people so that we're all working towards it. I think I'm a good business developer. So I'm good at bringing new business, finding new ways to add value to the business. I'm kind of that non-operative, non-administrative person. So for me, having a partner that's a developer, having a partner that can help with our administrative side, handling customer bookings, customer service, scheduling our people, all that stuff is really outside of my expertise. I don't have the attention span for it. So for me, it's really just, I guess, creating a vision and assembling all the pieces necessary to make it happen.
Right on, right on. So according to some research that I just made up, some of the most stressful things in this world, right? You got death, divorce, taxes, moving, and, you know, selling a house or buying a house, right? So you're dealing with people that are probably touching some of the most stressful times in their life. Talk to us about how you work with people to create good satisfaction in a time where it is the most stressful thing in the world that they might be going through.
You're right, and I'm glad you brought that up, because actually in a lot of surveys, people put moving as one of the most stressful thing in their lives, only after death of a family member or divorce. So it's really up there. When you think about it, for us, it's I guess you could say it's another customer, but for the person who's moving, they could have been there in their house for the past 10 years, 20 years. You know, that's their home base, that's their HQ, everything that they belong, that they own is there. So for us, we really take a customer service approach first. When you call our company, you're going to deal with one of us. We don't outsource a call center. We really keep it with what we know we can control. So basically, we give you somebody that will walk you through every step of the way. We identified a lot of problems with movers. So you get a lot of, I mean, and I'm sure you know, because we shared a little bit of your background before. It can be deceiving. Moving companies can be deceiving. You know, like they'll tell you one price and it ends up being the other. A lot of the people that are working in the companies don't really like the job because they see a cheaper job. And so really it's getting people that understand that we're helping people through a very stressful time. You can expect our people to come in and have a conversation with you. You know, you can expect young, presentable people. They've got their futures. They're doing this more of as, you know, a cash earner in college. So really it's delivering on an experience. So it's saying it's why are you moving here? Telling you a little bit about the city, things like that. It's a more personalized approach the whole way through.
Yeah, man, that is awesome. So this goes along with branding, right? So you have to set yourself apart from those other moving companies who maybe don't have the best reputation, or moving companies in general, right? So how did you go about setting that different branding strategy or setting yourself apart from the other companies?
Well, so from the beginning, we tried to have a very clean look using so we leveraged UCF's brand at first, right? You could tell from all of our social media presence, what we try to do really, and just, sorry, I got a little distracted there. Tell you our story, share our story with you. A lot of what you see us posting is about us. It's about the connection that we just made with a certain real estate group. It's all based around us and who we are and what we're trying to accomplish here, rather than selling you on why we're better than everybody else. We let our reviews speak for themselves. We have over 100 reviews online that are all 5-star reviews, and people are sharing experiences that this was a very stressful time in our lives, like we said. And Nightspeed went really above and beyond to do it. So we trained to really go above and beyond. We say to our guys, look, treat this as if this were your friend's mother that's moving. Okay, don't treat this like you're just there to make your money. Treat this like you're supposed to turn this person's day around. So our branding, I mean, we have very loud, energetic, in-your-face kind of brand. We've got these big trucks with lightning bolts on them. I think we just pique interest in, like, so wait, I thought this was a moving company. I thought moving companies were boring. What is this team all about? And then it just kind of piques curiosity. And once you look in, you see, okay, these are the people within the company that we're looking at now. So I think we just, we're a relationship business. I think our brand is just very relationship based.
Awesome. So in terms of branding, you're essentially telling a story of who you guys are and letting people build a relationship with you by your post and by the way you do marketing, by the way you market your truck, by the way you present yourself, by the way your team talks with customers, right? So you're doing this. What advice do you have for companies out there who are trying to find their brand, trying to find their voice?
I would say speak your truth. That's the number one thing for us. It was like, as entrepreneurs, we tend to want to write this super exciting narrative about ourselves, about, you know, who is it that we are, who is it that we want to be. But I think if you can just share your truth, share your story, that's what people connect with the most. So being genuine for me is the number one thing when you look at, you know, defining your branding. I would just say also just something a little more practical, whatever space you're in, look around, look at the main players in your space, in your industry, the successful brands, and model. Modeling is a super useful technique. Take what one brand did, add your own flavor to it, and carry forward. There's really a lot of times there's no need to reinvent the wheel if it's not something that's coming naturally.
And that's good. Well, so there's a bunch of different questions and directions I want to go. I want to talk to you about, you know, what was it look like, you know, what did it look like for, you know, a young entrepreneur? You started this when you're 20. You're a young man right now as an entrepreneur in the community. Like, what does it look like for you to, you know, be, you know, growing a business, and how does it feel being a young man with a successful business? Like, talk to me about the psychology or what goes in your brain.
Well, I think it's really challenging as a young person, and thank you for that. I don't feel young, but as a young person in business, because you lack that experience, and in the eyes of a lot of people, that means you lack credibility. I think as a young man or woman in a new industry in a city, you want to be as genuine and as like upfront about where you're at, right? So I think the whole fake it till you make it approach is kind of dwindling away with how open our lives are these days. I mean, just on social, everybody really just knows everything about you. So there's only so much that you can front or that you can posture. I think being very upfront, speaking about the reason why you're doing it, really it's passion that allows you to stand out as a real player, I guess you could say, in the industry while you're young. It goes down to, you know, to being yourself and sincere. For me, that's been what I think has worked.
Yeah, man, that's great. Talk to us about a bad move. Okay, talk to us about, like, because in the moving, I worked at a moving company, and you know, there are times when a truck hits a bump, something breaks, you drop something, like mistakes happen. Yeah. Talk to us about a mistake that you guys made and how you made it right, because 100 customer reviews and, you know, all that kind of positive things, you know, those are good. But talk to us about a time where there was maybe something negative that happened.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, our most loyal customers usually start with some kind of mess up that we go out of our way to fix. I'll tell you our biggest one. So we had just moved into our warehouse in South Florida. And we said, cool, so we're going to use all this extra space for storage. The first customer that we decided to take on is, we just opened up a relationship with one of the real estate brokerages in South Florida, one of the Coldwell bankers down there. And so the office manager's husband, and what? So them, they were moving, right? So they were our customer, the office manager at this new office that we just opened a relationship with. And this was right around the time the hurricane hit last year. And so we decided, okay, we're going to take all your stuff. We'll store it for a couple of days, and then we'll take it to the new house. So we took it to the storage, and we made a big mistake of not laying it down on pallets. When you have a warehouse, the number one rule is anything you lay down on there, you put on pallets, right? In case of a flood or whatever the case is. We obviously weren't expecting a flood, but it turns out it rained really heavy for 2 days in a row. We go to the warehouse, and all of their contents, I mean, this is a... we had probably 1,000 square feet of their things laid out. All of their contents got soaked up about 6 inches up. So we had to call an entire restoration team to, you know, to empty out all the contents. We had all these racks. We filled the entire warehouse with racks. We were all out there laying, you know, individual books on there, individual albums, bunch of personal, really, you know, baby pictures, you name it. It was all soaked and it was all gone. So we went really out of our way to make sure every single one thing was fixed. And this was a, you know, we had to send the furniture away to get repaired. One repairman couldn't do it, so we had to send it to another. So this really added like double the amount of logistics that we had to deal with as it was. And it cost us, you know, way more than we would have expected it to. But we, at the end of the day, we came through. All of their belongings were either repaired or replaced. And we learned a couple things. First of all, use pallets. And second of all, for something like this, this is where your insurance comes in. This is why we have such, you know, expensive insurance for cargo, for liability, for auto, for everything. This is when you call those people to handle it for you. Because looking back, you know, we could have just paid our deductible, could have got taken care of, our customer would have been happy, and we would have moved on. You know, that's just one that comes to mind.
Wow. Well, it sounds like, you know, you guys went way out of your way to fix something that, I mean, you couldn't really control a flood or a hurricane, but you could, you know, could put pallets down. But it sounds like you really went out of your way. And to this day, do you still have a relationship with this customer, and are you still doing business with them?
Oh, we have a great relationship with them. They're actually one of our biggest advocates at their office. Because we really, really, and it wasn't just because they were the office manager. That's something that I wanted to point out. It's just, we know that moving, there's so many variables. You know, things are going to happen. Things are going to break. No matter how careful we are, just things may go wrong. The way we deal with it says it all, you know. The fact that we went and we, you know, we really followed through with them all the way to the end until they were really satisfied, said a lot to them, and spoke a lot about the service that we offer.
Awesome. What is the heaviest or most unique thing you've ever moved?
Well, we've had, I mean, pool tables over 1,000 pounds. Gun safes are a fun one always to deal with. We've had pianos that, oh my gosh, we've taken, you know, a 4-man team 5 hours to move a grand piano before. There's definitely some fun things. I think gun safes are always the most unique just because, I mean, it's just a giant box with no ledges, nothing to hold. So you really got to get creative on moving that.
I totally understand. Yeah, gun safes. We had to move a gun safe. Or it was either a gun safe or a piano, and we had to carry it down a dirt road. So I totally feel it. So this is cool. You're building this company. Where do you see your future going?
So right now, one of our biggest challenges is just working internally to standardize everything. Everything needs to be a procedure at this point. I mean, we're getting 50, 60 calls a day right now, inquiries, and that's getting to the point where it's taken away our time from everything else. So right now, solidifying everything internally, as far as what our goals are, we plan to really, like, so we are in Tampa, but we plan to really launch in Tampa and enter into Pensacola and Tallahassee by the end of the year. What I would like to do is really consolidate the Florida branches, build this out for another couple of years, and then we really believe that this is a franchisable model, especially because of the online platform aspect that we're building to it. So we're actually building our own software, CRM and logistics tool with a front-facing website that is kind of like a plug and play for a new franchisee owner. A dashboard where they can see everything that's going on in the business. They could manage everything from scheduling to accounting. And we see it as a new brand, a new player in the industry that could have some potential to make a bang.
Awesome. Well, that sounds exciting. We're excited to watch this journey with you and watch you grow as an Orlando, you know, founder, and now spreading across the state and maybe one day the universe. It's really exciting to see you go. Is there anything that you would like to, that we didn't talk about, that you would like to chat about on this show to the audience?
Yeah, sure. I think, I guess one of the main lessons that I've learned just doing this whole thing is that indecision is a big cause for, you know, things not going the way we want them to go. A lot of times you just have to follow your gut and just make a decision and be willing to fail with that decision, because that's progress. sitting there debating your options, laying out, you could really only, you know, think so much and strategize so much and plan so much. There comes a point where you have to start making small decisions. So I'll give you an example to kind of put it into perspective to whatever business people may be in. When we first started, we really just worked on getting, I worked on getting an MVP. I didn't call it an MVP back in the day, but that's really what I was creating for the moving service. You know, for a moving company, you would think, okay, you need these big trucks, you need professional equipment, I need to know what I'm doing, I need a warehouse, X, Y, Z. What we did is said, what's the most, you know, stripped down version of this model? So we need a license to operate. Okay, that's $600, we can come up with that. We don't have our own trucks, but what model can we build? So we said, I can rent U-Hauls and I can pay my buddies a couple, you know, $20, $30 an hour to help us out. So we built out a model where I could assemble all the pieces that were necessary to get the service done and collect feedback on that and improve. If I hadn't made that decision to kind of take a risk by renting a truck and, you know, sending somebody unqualified, whatever it was, we probably wouldn't have gone very far with this. I probably would have said, I don't really want to start a moving company. So a lot of times it's just, you know, making a decision, Josh, and I'm sure, you know, you shared with me a couple of your past experiences. It's all about making a decision and failing forward, you know, make a decision, make a call and learn from your mistakes. And then you only get better. You really only get better.
Man, that is good input right there. Who do you want to give a shout out to or thank or just highlight on this show? This is you. I give you the mic. You could thank people or just, you know, this is your time to highlight someone that's important to you.
Okay. A couple. I mean, I have to give a shout out to my team, you know, the people that really make it happen. Mike Ferguson, my right hand operator. He is a killer. I mean, he's amazing. He's really great with customers, with our guys. And then really, I think two of my mentors I would like to give a shout out to, Jameson Gavin and Alex Medina, both two young guys, late 20s, very successful guys, very helpful guys. So I just like to give a shout out to them. I owe a lot of what I know to those two.
Awesome. Well, as we wrap this up, our conversation today, man, I just want to thank you for coming on the show, being extremely, you know, honest and genuine with this conversation and just sharing really good knowledge and experience from, you know, your real life experience. So thanks for coming on the show. Really appreciate having you.
Absolutely, Josh. Happy to be here, like I said.
Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen in the audience, fellow entrepreneurs listening into this, this was a great conversation with CEO Julian of Nightspeed Moving. If you are looking in the area, anywhere right now in the state of Florida, and you're looking to do a move, you know, I just want to encourage you to check out one of our local entrepreneurs. Check out his website, nightspeedmoving.com. Right, and you can find out information about your move, and this sounds like an advertisement for it. But we really want to support our local entrepreneurs and help lift them up and cheer him on as he builds incredible things. So Julian, thanks for coming on the show. Audience, thank you for listening in, and we'll look for you guys on the next episode. See you, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.